Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again, the time you've been waiting for all weekend. It's time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, joined in studio by my trusty executive director, John Schneider, and our producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy.
Happy Labor Day weekend, Sam.
Well, happy Labor Day weekend to you folks as well. Hey, listen, guys, we have a tremendous weekend here, right? Last night, we had President Trump in Johnstown, you know, doing a rally out there. We heard from him, J.D. Vance. You heard from Dave McCormick, you know, all these other folks. We are going to win Pennsylvania this year. I'm looking forward to it. But, guys, it's going to be close. You know, polls are out last couple of days here. You've seen polls out from Emerson, from Ipsos, from Rasmussen, the whole bit. And it is like neck and neck, statistically tied within the margin of error. A poll that I just saw that came out on Thursday from Ipsos showed Trump 45%, Harris at 43%. And this was basically a swing state estimate. So that included Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, North Carolina, Michigan, and Nevada. Now, before that, you had Rasmussen. They came out, they had Trump up 2, Trump 48, Harris 46. Now, the last poll, they had Trump up plus 3. So she's made some ground. Emerson was out with a poll here. They came out with their poll on Wednesday, and it had Trump in Wisconsin up 1%, 50% to 49. The last poll there, it had her up 1. Reuters had a general election poll. Now, again, their general election poll had Harris up by 4. We also had some new Senate polls out, you know, and this one here, new Senate poll out that came out on Thursday from Fabrizio/Ward in Pennsylvania. They have Casey at 46% and McCormick at 43%. And folks, if you don't follow this, you're not aware of the fact that at no point should an incumbent senator be in this position, you know, just 70 days out from an election here. You know, Casey fails to reach 50% consistently, seems to have a high of about 48, and despite he and Chuck Schumer dumping $40 million in negative ads, you know, on McCormick, McCormick is here right now in this race, 3 points. You know, that same polling group, Fabrizio Ward, they in Pennsylvania, they have Trump up 1 over Harris. They have him up 2 in Michigan, but down 4 in Wisconsin. You know, so folks, what you're seeing is these polls are all over the place. You know, Emerson had, in Arizona, they had Trump plus 3. In Georgia, they had Harris up 1. In Michigan, they had Harris up 3. In Nevada, they had Harris up 1. In North Carolina, Trump was 1. Pennsylvania, they're viewing it as a statistical tie. In Wisconsin, Trump plus 1. Now, you know, when we talk about these polls and we talk about these numbers, the only poll that matters is the one on Election Day. And that's why I am urging all of you folks to go out and vote early to apply for a mail-in, no-excuse mail-in ballot here in Pennsylvania and get your vote in. I know who I'm voting for. I don't need to wait until November 5th to do it. So I've already signed up and requested a ballot. And I will tell you that when that thing comes in, I mean, it won't even go into a pile to be looked at later. I will immediately open it up, fill it out, and I will drive it to the post office to get this thing sent back and returned because I can't wait to vote for Donald J. Trump for president, J.D. Vance for vice president, Dave McCormick for Senate, and all of our other candidates up and down the ballot.
Sam, if I can add something here.
Yeah.
Now, technically, they can send ballots out 50 days beforehand, but we just learned from the Allegheny County's Elections Division that they're estimating 25 days out before the election when they'll send out the mail-in ballots, correct?
Well, it'll be prior to 25 days.
25 out. Days, okay.
Okay. yeah, because of last-minute court challenges by Democrats trying to take and put people off the ballot, and then even when they're successful, there's an appeal period there. So the Board of Elections has to wait, or Division of Elections, has to wait until all these are exhausted, as well as appeals from folks where referendum questions are being offered onto the ballot.
Yeah.
So they have to wait until all of that is done before they're even able to create a ballot. Then they have to send it to the print shop. The print shop has to take and send it back. Then they have to take and use that for logic and accuracy testing on the machines to make sure that all the scanners will read properly,
yeah,
will tabulate properly. And only after all that is done can they then notify the print shop and mailhouse that it's okay to send out ballots? So you're really looking at late September or the first week of August, late September, first week of October, at the earliest, before the mail-in ballots go out. But like I said, as soon as those things come out and I get them, John, I'm filling it out, taking it right back to the post office, okay? And that's what I urge all of you folks to do. That's how we can make a difference. That's how we can win. That's how we can take back this Commonwealth, you know, and this country. So, folks, that's my monologue. Certainly not as funny as Johnny Carson used to be or even Jay Leno, but certainly much better than Stephen Colbert, you know, or Jimmy Kimmel, you know, or today. So, hey, well, I got you here. We are going to have a great show today because we're joined in studio by candidate for U.S. Congress in Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District, candidate James Hayes. Now, James is a business executive with multiple degrees in economics and business, and James is challenging, you know, Summer Lee in this year's congressional elections. James lives in Pittsburgh's Shadyside neighborhood, you know, and he's challenging her for her seat in the 12th Congressional District, and that encompasses parts of the city, or most of the city of Pittsburgh, and portions of the South Hills and parts of Westmoreland County. Well, James is a native Pennsylvanian, the son of a union steelworker who was one of those displaced during the massive deindustrialization of the 1980s when over 150,000 jobs were lost in the steel industry. And, you know, James credits the United Steelworkers of America for providing the scholarship money that first sent him to college and launched his professional career. James holds degrees from Georgetown, Princeton, Chicago, and Case Western Reserve Universities, and he has held top positions with Fortune 500 companies, as well as a six-year stint with the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, Virginia. Folks, if this isn't telling you anything, you know, this is telling you this guy's a heck of a smart guy, okay? And someone we would be blessed to have representing our folks in PA 12. Well, James is a free market advocate, and that stands in opposition to the progressive stances and ignorant stances of the incumbent, Summer Lee. Hayes and his wife, Brenda, they have four daughters. And, you know, James, I'll let you tell the story here, but you had a son, James Michael, who lost his life, was killed in a yet-to-be-solved homicide back in December of
2022.
So, hey, folks, welcome to the show, James Hayes. James, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Sam, thanks for that great introduction. Yeah, as you said, I'm running against Summer Lee, a person that is totally out of tune with Western Pennsylvania and the values of Western Pennsylvania. As we've talked before, you know, I am interested in supporting our law enforcement and keeping our community safe. She is advocating defunding the police and has even talked about abolishing prisons, which if you could imagine how bad our situation is now, can you imagine we let people roam around with GPS tracking that they can cut off and do whatever they've done, which we've actually seen.
We've seen hundreds of cases of that.
It's scary. It's tragic. I want to have a controlled border. Summer Lee wants an open border, and I don't know if you're following the news, but there was just an article that came about the situation in Denver, Colorado, where Venezuelan gangs were allowed to come across the border unvetted, have now taken over whole apartment buildings in the city of Denver and are terrorizing the residents there. And the lawlessness and crime is spilling over into the Denver suburbs. Folks, if we don't get control, if we don't have a pro-community law enforcement environment, that is going to spread across the country. And we need to get control of our border. We need to support law enforcement, and we need to keep our communities safe.
Well, I mean, that is great. Thank you for sharing those positions here and sort of juxtaposing them against where Summer Lee sits, you know. But as we look at this, and I've been looking at polling, you've seen much of it on television and in the newspapers, but they talk about the biggest issue, the number one issue for voters today is the economy, okay? Well, let's say inflation / the economy, okay? You know, immigration, you know, is number two there, okay? So, you know, your stint is serving on the Federal Reserve Board, you know, should eminently qualify you as someone that could help get us back on track because, you know, these Democrats, Summer Lee and her ilk, her crew, they run around, they talk about things like affordable housing or a lack of affordable housing. But yet these same people have just let over 10 million people into this country to compete for the housing that is available today. Their zoning, and their planning and zoning policies are so restrictive in the things that they would want to do, they hinder the development of new developments, which hinders our ability to add to the existing supply or housing stock. You know, they've supported policies which have led to this increased inflation, which has driven up the cost of building materials and labor and mortgage rates. So that, James, even now, you know, middle-class taxpayers, middle-class folks can't afford a home. So the American dream is escaping all of us. You know, please tell our listeners.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
You know, what you'd be able to do to address some of these things.
So first, Sam, none of their policies make sense. They actually go against each other. So as you mentioned, you let in 10 million people into the workforce. And so, you know, we're talking about a headline unemployment number of 3.5%, 4%. But what they're not including is those 10 million people that are also out looking for jobs. You throw them into the mix, and our unemployment rate is actually 9, 10%. Because those people are also out looking for and competing for jobs against American citizens. So they let in 10 million people, which drives down wages and worsens working conditions. And then they talk about imposing a $25 minimum wage. That makes no sense, because you're driving down wages. You want to impose a $25 an hour minimum wage. All that will do is make sure that there are millions and millions of unemployed people, or there are people that are in the underground economy that are cheating, that are working outside of the tax structure, and they are not contributing in terms of you know, taxation to the to the community. So this is tragic what's been done. They they rail against inflation. They talk about companies, greednomics, they call it, and it's really Bidenomics, and it started with shutting down the energy industry. Energy is an input into every single thing we do. Either it is a direct input, it's an indirect input because you need it to create, for example, fertilizer, or it's taking products from where they're made to where they're needed and consumed. And so when you attack the energy industry, you drive up costs across the board, and that is one of the biggest contributions to inflation. And then you add in the crazy fiscal spending that they're talking about in terms of the infrastructure bill and the Orwellian-named Inflation Reduction Act, which actually threw tons of dollars into the economy that helped drive inflation. So they have policies working against each other. They are advocating an agenda that is a radical left agenda. If you look at a lot of what's in the Infrastructure Act, it's not for infrastructure. It's to drive this crazy Green New Deal. It was their Trojan horse to get the Green New Deal implemented. And then I talked to business people that looked at taking advantage of some of the provisions of the infrastructure bill. And there are so many poison pills tied to it in terms of DEI requirements, all of this woke agenda restrictions that go in, like, that are conditions for being able to access the dollars, that a lot of them are just throwing up their hands and saying, you know what, it doesn't even make any sense. So, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's not anything that's actually helping the economy. It's driving a crazy leftist agenda, and it is out of touch with the people of Western Pennsylvania. It's out of touch with the people of the United States.
Well, what you're describing is the reason, folks, this is why only the federal government could spend $8 billion to only put in 7 electric charging stations nationwide. Think about that. This is why they talked about expanding broadband access to our rural areas and things like that. Why this stuff hasn't happened, because of the insane demands, you know, the poison pills and the strings they attach to this legislation, which doesn't do anything but block it. You know, I mean, it's just, again, why I don't understand. And James, you know, you're running a campaign here, so I don't know that you've thought about this or we have an answer for this, but how do we end up electing so many economically illiterate, you know, people, putting them in positions of decision-making authority, you know, where they have such a clear lack of knowledge of how basic economics works, like supply and demand?
I think part of the reason is that people aren't focused on economic issues until it hits their pocketbook. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the last election, there were, you know, a lot of misinformation put out about Republican positions on topics like abortion, where they absolutely killed us in terms of that last cycle election. You know, I think we've figured out a way to better explain our positions and really clear the air so that that doesn't attack us as fatally in this election cycle. And I think now people are, you know, they're feeling the pain. They are feeling the pain of these policies. They know that, I mean, you don't have to have an economist tell them that their real income has gone down. They can look at the grocery cart and see that they're not getting as many goods out of their grocery store, right, as they did with the same paycheck, 3 years ago. So I do think that the economic issues are becoming a bigger part of the discussion. I think that the whole border issue has just spiraled out of control to where it's really affecting the safety and well-being of people, even in rural communities, where I bet they thought they were insulated from a lot of the tragedy that's going on because of this illegal border crossing. So I think that the issues are out now. I think it's there is a sea change. I mean, you have Kamala Harris with her really radical policies that she's espoused over the last 30 years, suddenly coming out, and I will point out, she didn't actually say this.
Exactly.
So people should understand that. She has not made one single change coming from her mouth of any of these positions that she's held for 30 years. But now you have surrogates saying that she supports a border wall, or that she thinks that there should be no tax on tips. Maybe at some point she's going to dye her hair orange. We'll see.
Exactly.
But I think there is an understanding that the policies that we are advocating are the policies that benefit America. It's the policies that will drive people out to vote. It's the policies that will help us get elected. And so now, in a very, I think, inauthentic way, they're attempting to co-opt them. But people, you should know, these words have not come out of Kamala Harris's mouth. In fact, we haven't heard anything from Kamala Harris's mouth for the last, 50 days since she
40
announced?
40 days, 40-some days.
40-some days since she announced. I think they're being disingenuous. I think that we know the policies that work. We know the policies that we have been advocating for our whole existence. And we know the policies that benefit America. And I hope that the American public isn't snookered by this sudden change of attitude, which I really don't believe is authentic, and that they vote Republican in the fall.
Well, see, I'm perplexed here because and I know you must be as well. You're a smart guy, okay, obviously. And when we see that the economy is the number one issue, when we see that since Kamala Harris took office, gasoline has gone up 51%. Electricity has gone up 32%. Airfare has increased in price by 23%. Groceries are up across the board an average of 22%. Rent has increased by 22%. Eggs are up by 47%. You know, car insurance is up by 54%. I mean, when you look at absolutely everything since Kamala was elected vice president, prices are up 20.2%, but real wages are only up 3.9%. So many studies and reports have been out that it costs the average family $11,400 more per year to buy the same goods and services that they bought back in 2019. This is insane. So when you look at this, help me understand, and I don't know if you can't, how the polls can be so close when just a few short years ago, people weren't dealing with this pain at their pocketbook, at their kitchen table, at the gas pump, or at the grocery store.
So you asked me two questions. I'm going to take them in order. So the first is, how are people not realizing the pain of inflation? So if you look at the Democrats today, they are patting themselves on the back because they say that all of these statistics that we've been complaining about for the last 3 years, that they're all getting better. But let's take a look at that. So you had you know, a dozen eggs that you bought 3.5 years ago. They cost you a dollar. Now they cost you $1.30, $1.40. So that's 40% inflation over 3.5 years. So they've pushed inflation to the point where people can't take it anymore, where they say, like, you know, that's enough. I just can't take it anymore. I'm not going to do it. And so now, instead of $1.40, now your eggs cost $1.44. And they cheer because they say they brought in the rate of inflation down. Mm-hmm. But they haven't, because they shouldn't compare it to the last 6 months. They should compare it to 3 years ago to understand the damage they've done. Look at immigration. On illegal immigration or illegal border crossing, mm-hmm. we've had 10 million, 12 million people, if you believe the most recent numbers, over the last, let's say, 3 years. So that's 4 million people a year. Now they are cheering because instead of 4 million people a year, now it's only down, you know, it's down to like 2.5 million people a year. And they're saying, woohoo, look, we've reduced inflation by a double-digit percent. I mean, sorry, we've reduced immigration by double-digit percent. No, we can't compare it to the crazy numbers that have been going on for the last 3 years. We have to compare it to what was at the end of the Trump administration. And so that's what people that and so they are using. I mean, you can't. They're not lying. Everything's down, but it is quantum leaps worse than it was under the prior administration. And so people need to understand that when you hear these talking points, oh, inflation is down, oh, you know, illegal border crossings are down, it's comparing to a statistic that should never have existed in the first place, because we should have had these things under control. They were allowed to get under control under the recent administration, and we are all suffering for it now. Now let's look at you have Vice President Harris talking about all the things she's going to do. Well, she's in office. Why isn't she doing them now?
Exactly.
Why do you have to wait? Yeah, you go to the beach and ask Joe Biden to sign the 94 executive orders that he did when he got into office and reverse them all. And let's shut the border again. Let's get our energy industry going again. You can do it all today. So why give us the false promise that if we give you a promotion, when you fail to do the job in the position you have today, that you deserve that? It doesn't make any sense.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Democrats are doing cartwheels over the recent report from July, that said inflation was running at a rate of 2.9%. But that's still more than twice what it was when Trump left office back in January of 2021. When Biden took office, it was 1.4%. So, and also, people don't understand the correlation between inflation and prices. Inflation is the rate of growth the prices are making, okay? But the prices aren't coming down. And these prices, unfortunately, may never come down. But we need to stop the bleeding. We need to stop the bleeding now. And you pointed out something just a little while ago. It was their horrific policies toward energy and hostile policies toward energy which started this whole ball rolling, because energy is a key component into the calculations in which we derive inflation rates. But, you know, a gas, just your food, folks, it requires fuel to run the equipment that we use to farm. It requires fuel to be able to take and process the raw material into products or to food. It requires fuel to get those to market. It requires fuel and energy to air condition or, you know, power our freezers or our stores or things of that nature. So all of that is extremely important here. And all of that has contributed to the rise in prices that you see and that you pay at the grocery stores. Grocery stores, they average a less than 2% operating margin. Less than 2 cents on every dollar. You know, these folks are not getting rich. There's no price gouging going on. It's pure economic illiteracy, you know, taking place here. When I hear from the Biden administration or, you know, Bob Casey, you know, I don't know where he suddenly woke up from and decided to come out and talk about things that don't exist, greedflation and, you know, the whole bit. But they just don't get it. And And folks, you're the one paying the price. You know, I am just left astounded that the polls are this close. You may not like Donald Trump personally. You may not like his style. You may not like, you know, the things that you hear. And I can tell you, what did we learn as kids? We were told by our parents, don't believe everything that you hear. Okay. I've been told, don't believe what you hear and only half of what you see.
Yeah, that's what my mom said. Always said, yeah, only believe half of what you see and none of what you hear.
Yep. Exactly. So we're going to come back right after the break, and we're going to talk to James and let James explain in much greater detail, you know, why he's running against Summer Lee, what he would like to do and accomplish for the folks of the 12th Congressional District here, the people of Pittsburgh, and also part of Westmoreland County. And folks, I can't wait to hear it. So this is Sam DeMarco from The Elephant in the Room, and we'll be right back after the break. Folks, welcome back to The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Right before the break, I was on a rant talking about the economic illiteracy of the folks in the Biden-Harris administration, as well as folks in the Senate, like Bob Casey, who's out there muttering about greedflation and things like that, price gouging, things that aren't happening right now. And James, I had some things he wanted to share with us. So James, you know, please share what you're talking about.
Yeah, so, you know, I'd start, Sam, with a question, like which one of us wouldn't want to make the same amount of money we could make every week and not have to work at all? And that's a question that small business people ask themselves every day, because they are faced with, do I cash it all in, put it in a money market certificate and get, you know, an interest rate and go sit on the beach, or do I keep plugging away at work? And so when you have this notion of greedflation, it just makes me laugh, because it's coming from people that have no sense of what it means to run a business. So you're the small business person and they impose a minimum wage on you. That means that your income goes down, and now you're looking at, okay, hey, I used to own 10% from this business. Now I'm earning 7%. I could cash it all in and make 5%, 5.5% on a CD now. They put regulations on you. Now instead of 7%, you're making 5%. Boy, you're like thinking, man, that's a tough decision. Do I keep working, or do I, you know, keep getting this extra 0.5%? And now they want to raise your energy costs and drive the cost of all your inputs to where you're making 3%. At that point, you could just cash it all in, put it in a certificate of deposit, earn 5.5%, and go do whatever great thing in life you would rather do. Mm-hmm. And that is the risk that we face, because that has two then negative effects on our economy. First of all, you lose the goods and services that they were producing. And so that means that whoever's left, they're going to have the ability to raise their prices even more. So that's going to drive even more inflation. But the second thing is, you lost all those jobs. And in the United States, small business is the biggest producer of job growth anywhere of any group in the country. So this notion of greedflation, it's a joke. It makes no sense. We need to put the responsibility where it belongs, and that is on this Bidenomics that has driven up prices across the board, that is impacting not only the consumer, but it is impacting small businesses in a negative way. That, again, it makes them think, is this something that I can keep doing? Is this something I can sustain? Or is it now time for me to cash out, because I can put my money to better use and have a lot more struggle doing it?
You know, when we talk about this and you try to explain to folks, and you look at, well, why, again, are polls so close? Why are people, you know, confused as to who to vote for, who to support? I think Democrats, they are good at one thing, and that's pitting folks against each other, whether it be class-based, whether it be race-based, whether it be gender-based, whatever. That's what they're good at. They're not so good at actually solving problems. You know, so when you look at your opponent, you know, Summer Lee, she is, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe her, but, I mean, everything is...
Yeah, I would just call her a racist and a bigot. So, just lay it out there. So for her, every problem is a black and brown people against white supremacy, every single problem. Yeah. So how can you ever solve a thing? Because we all know, whether you're, you know, a super economist, whether you're working in a retail store, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, that every problem has a root cause. It's socioeconomic. It's has to do with regulations. It has to do with you pick it. Every single problem is not a black and brown people versus a white supremacy problem. And so if that's the only lens you have, you are never going to solve anything because you don't understand why anything isn't working. You actually have no clue. And so that is the problem with my opponent. She has no clue.
Well, to your point there, to her, all she has is to cry racism on everything. That's her hammer. And every issue out there to her is a nail, And we've just seen, she has been abysmal. She represents part of her district as the second largest Jewish population here in the United States after New York. And she has been absent and on the wrong side of this issue ever since October 7th, when it comes to standing up or supporting her friends, or the friends she used to have anyway, in the Jewish community. And she still continues to support, Hamas and their cause in many of the statements that she makes. What are you doing to try to take and introduce yourself to this community and show them that, hey, folks, you have a choice on November 5th?
Yeah, so and it's not a question of introducing, to the community. We've been supportive of the community. We've been involved with the community, since we've been in Pittsburgh. My wife, as you know, is a teacher at a Jewish middle school. So we have strong relations in the community. But what I have been doing is trying to counter some of the messaging, of Summer Lee. So Summer Lee, she boycotted the Netanyahu speech. I know there are supporters and detractors of Netanyahu. To me, that doesn't matter. Israel is one of our strongest allies in the region. I personally believe that Netanyahu is an absolute advocate for the United States. So I personally think that he's one of in a country that is one of our strong supporter. He is an individual that is one of our strongest supporters in that country. And so to me, to your point, it was embarrassing that our region wasn't going to have a representative from our district that was going to be at the Netanyahu speech. So when I heard that Summer Lee boycotted, I reached out to the Republican delegation in Western Pennsylvania, in Western part of Pennsylvania, and I'd like to thank G.T. Thompson. He actually was able to get me a guest pass, and so I was able to go and represent the Congressional District 12 at the Netanyahu speech, and I was proud to do so. In the DNC, you saw Summer Lee joining the pro-Hamas protests that were taking place outside of the DNC. You will not see me. You will not see me there. So you're right. She is not on any right side of any issue that represents Western Pennsylvania, whether it's crime, whether it's energy, whether it's supporting Israel. And so that's what I'm looking to change, to bring some sanity back, to bring some real representation back to the person that is in Congress in this district. So we're out, we're meeting people, we're supporting groups. I'm out in Braddock, I'm out in Carrick. I'm out in areas maybe where, traditionally Republicans wouldn't have gone. And I'm seeing a lot of support because people are scratching their heads, wondering what Summer Lee has done for them, why she isn't in their neighborhoods, but she finds time to, go and protest outside of the UN for the pro-Hamas cause. She finds time to protest at the DNC for the pro-Hamas cause, but apparently she doesn't have time to advocate for the people in her district.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. And, to your point, when she was running in her primary here, she kept bragging about how much money she brought into to town here. But a full almost $600 million of the money that she was talking about came in the form of loans.
Not even a loan, a loan guarantee.
Oh, loan guarantee.
A loan
guarantee.
It wasn't even cash. It was a loan guarantee.
And the money that did come, I think that folks that received that money should get down on their hands and knees and thank former Congressman Mike Doyle, because those requests for those grants and loans were in before she ever went to Washington. She, James, help folks understand how you could be, you would be able to work, you know, with folks on both sides of the aisle to try to solve problems and to take and move PA-12 forward, you know, because she doesn't have that ability. I've not seen her work with anyone, you know, on the other side of the aisle. I've not seen her even work with her own party.
Right. No,
I'm trying to find a solution to any real problems.
No, I agree. And so, you know, let's take crime, for example. People ask me, well, from a federal level, what can you do for local crime? Well, you know, a congressman has three responsibilities in Congress. They appropriate money. They provide oversight of the federal agencies, and they make laws. So in terms of crime, you know, I want to make sure that our local law enforcement has the resources they need. We can do that through the Department of Homeland Security that provides, you know, grants to local law enforcement so that they can buy things like, you know, body armor, so that they can have the canine programs like they tried to get rid of on Jeanette, I guess, for just recently. Mm-hmm. And so that they have the resources to keep their community safe. In terms of oversight, making sure that the Department of Justice isn't hamstringing law enforcement. If you talk to law enforcement, they'll tell you that this administration has been absolutely, you know, at odds, or not at odds, but certainly that they've been kind of antagonistic toward local law enforcement. That they're hamstringing their ability to do their job. From Congress, I would provide oversight to make sure that the DOJ doesn't do that. And then in terms of legislation, making sure that, you know, our laws as well support law enforcement, support the efforts of local communities to keep themselves safe. And so you can take down, you know, energy, same thing, you know, making sure that the Department of Energy is supporting our energy industry and not inhibiting its ability to do its job, making sure that the laws support that. And so you look at those three responsibilities, and you know, as you tick down crime, as you tick down the border, as you tick down energy, as you tick down supportive allies, there are roles that a congressman can play within each of those three duties that he or she has to make sure that the local community benefits.
Well, James, that's great. For our listeners who are listening to you and saying, you know what, this guy appeals to me, and I want to support him, how would they go about helping your campaign or donating to your campaign?
Sure. So, you know, I think that people poo-poo yard signs, but I've become a big fan of yard signs because I believe that they do show a level of support. So I encourage everyone, please, you know, send my campaign an email. You can go to the website. And the website, by the way, is jameshayesforpa.com. That's James Hayes, HAYESFORPA.com. You can go and send us an email. We'll be happy to get your yard signs. You can also donate directly on the website. So I obviously encourage you to do that as well. But they can do that to show support. And I will tell you something. You know, you talked about the polls in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and how they were tight. I really question those polls because I was out with the Pittsburgh City Committee at Italian Days. In Bloomfield, I think everyone knows Bloomfield has a right. reputation for being a very liberal area of the city. So we were in Bloomfield. We had maybe 200 Trump for President signs. And of course, I had my sign as well.
John gave them that many. I have to yell at him.
Hey. And we gave away every single one, every single one. So if you go now, if you go into the Bloomfield neighborhood, you will see Trump signs in the Bloomfield neighborhood. You can't tell me that would have happened 4 years ago or 8 years ago. But I think people have seen the damage that this administration's policies have caused the U.S. And they're just fed up, whether they're Democrat, whether they're Republican, whether they're independent. And so, you know, I'm reaching out to all of those groups as well, because I think they also see that Summer Lee hasn't been good for Western Pennsylvania. She hasn't stepped up and done what a representative is supposed to do for their district. She's too busy focused on a national agenda and supporting her members of the squad and you know, some people that are like 3,000 miles away that have nothing to do with her district and doesn't have time for the people in her district. So I expect also to get Democrat, Republican, and independent support, and I expect to defeat Summer Lee in November.
Well, that's great. We're looking forward to that. It would be great to attend you know, when down in Washington, D.C., when you get sworn in, all right? But, you know, first, we've got to win this race.
Absolutely.
Okay? So it's heartening to hear the news that even in a in the city of Pittsburgh, which is, you know, 5.5-1 registered Democrat to Republican, that there was a demand for Trump signs there, which shows that, hey, people are at least paying attention. Now, a lot of attention here is being focused on the presidential debate, which is coming up on September 10th. Do you and your opponent have a debate scheduled?
We do not have a debate schedule. I invite Summerlee to debate. I'd love to debate Summerlee, and I will keep waiting.
You know, so that's interesting. So she's refusing to debate you. You know, again, here's somebody that claims to want to represent the people, but won't stand up, you know, before someone else challenging her ideas to give the people the opportunity to see a contrast and decide which direction they want to go.
And to be fair, maybe I should make the formal offer here on your station.
Sure.
I am formally offering Summerlee to do a debate. You pick the time, you pick the place, you pick the channel, and I would happily look forward to it.
Well, look, I know that the League of Women Voters or many others, any of the universities, you know, especially again, we're talking here in the city, would love to put on a debate like that. So maybe we can do something. You know, there was a woman that approached me last night or the other night at the Division of Elections meeting downtown in Pittsburgh, and she was from the League of Women Voters. And she was asking me if I would urge my candidates to take and complete their questionnaires. I should apologize to her because I was a little rough, but I talked about how I did not appreciate some of the questions that they put in their questionnaires, and I felt that they were biased and not nonpartisan, okay? But she continued to stress that, yeah, but it goes out to over 10,000 folks, you know, and so you may want to look at that and potentially look at completing hers. Send it to me, you know, so I can see what they're asking. Last year, I got the candidate questionnaire, and I specifically last night, or on Wednesday night, I told her, I said, hey, you were asking about, you had three questions. You wanted to know what I was going to do about racial justice or for social justice and police accountability. And I said, you know, to me, those are loaded questions. You're not asking, what do I want to accomplish for the people of Allegheny County? You weren't asking, what did I want to see? What were the issues that I was going to take and push or pursue? You didn't want to see what legislation was important to me. You were asking me loaded questions that came from an entirely left-wing perspective. She didn't have a whole lot to say.
Well, maybe I'll send it back with the question she should ask.
There you go. That's a perfect response. That gets you in their survey, the questionnaire, but it also shows that, hey, you're paying attention to the things that her voters care about and not those things that are on that survey.
That's what we'll do.
So, James, what else can our listeners do to help you? You know, you talked about going to the website where they're able to.
Yep, jameshaysforpa.com. Mm-hmm. And please, please, please get out and vote. And please vote early. I mean, there are so many things that can happen. You know, we've been having these cyber attacks, you know, that are shutting down, you know, our paying system and shutting down websites that we need to do work. They're talking about how COVID is resurging. They're talking about, you know, that there's an Mpox outbreak. I mean, there are so many things that could happen on a macro basis. And then not to mention, you know, your child has, you know, you need to take them to, you know, a doctor's appointment or, you know, your work comes up with an emergency project that you need to get finished. There are so many different things that can happen that can make it so that it is difficult or impossible for you to vote. So please do the mail-in ballot. Obviously, I'm hoping that you'll vote for James Hayes, but the important thing is to vote. Vote early. Make sure your vote gets in and counted. And let's not leave everything up to to that one single day when, there are multiple days that you have to take advantage of that opportunity.
No, James, well said. And let me echo something I need to repeat again. And I think I'm going to try to, John, it's your job, okay, as Robin to my Batman, to make sure that I do this every single show, because I have to urge folks to take and do that. You know, as James was sharing with you folks, there's so many things that can happen. It's been shown, studies have shown that every inch of rain on election day reduces turnout by 1%. Every inch of snow reduces turnout by 0.5%. Things happen, you know, life occurs. People get sick, they have to go out of town for work, their car breaks down, you know, a myriad of things happen. For even for the folks who go to the polls, I can tell you, as a member of the Board of Elections, we have 1,327 precincts out there. I can't recall a single election in the 9 years I've been in office where I haven't gotten a call or haven't been notified that some judge of elections failed to show up, you know, on time to open the polls at 7 a.m. while there was a line of people outside waiting to vote before they went off to work. But who knows if those folks would be able to come back or did come back. And I would bet that some of them didn't, okay? That's unacceptable. We saw in 2022 reports out of Arizona where they had problems with the machines and they were not able to take in work. We saw, it might have been 2021, up in Luzerne County, they ran out of ballots, okay? I can tell you it's going to be a high turnout election, folks. There's going to be lines at the doors, okay? You don't want to take and miss the opportunity to make your voice heard, to have your vote count because of any of these things. You can avoid it all by signing up and voting early. Well, let me go through it. You can vote early by going downtown to the county office building on the third floor and vote in the elections office. You have the ability to request a mail-in or absentee ballot, and you have the ability to return it a number of ways. One, after you've completed it, you've put your ballot in the secrecy envelope. You've put the secrecy envelope in the outer envelope, and you've signed and dated it. You can then take it to the United States Postal Service mailbox on your block. You can put it in your mailbox at your front door and just lift the flag up, and the postman will pick it up when he delivers your mail and take it. You have the ability to deliver it to the downtown election office. You have the ability to take it to the drop box that they have in the county office building, which is manned and under security. You have the ability to take it to one of the ballot return sites, which I'm certain they will have, which is really, folks, nothing more than a taxpayer-paid Democrat get-out-the-vote effort. More about all that later. Or you can even take it to the polls on election day. Turn your mail-in ballot in, if you hadn't submitted it, to the judge of elections. He will then void it, spoil it, and will give you a ballot for you to vote for that day. If for some reason you don't have the whole package there, and then what he will do is he'll give you a ballot to allow you to vote provisionally. You know, so folks, there are like six ways, you know, you can vote with these, and you have the ability to do this. You do not have to wait until November 5th. Now, one of the reasons why Republicans have struggled in the past couple of years here in Pennsylvania is because coming out of the global pandemic in 2020, we hadn't embraced early and mail-in voting as much as the Democrats had. And these folks built up substantial leads well before Election Day. Going back to 2022, when Dr. Oz and John Fetterman had their debate a week before the election, and Fetterman opened up with, "Good night, folks." Okay? It was a disaster. But Fetterman already had a 550,000 vote lead because so many mail-in ballots, that was the difference in mail-in ballots between the Democrats and Republicans. You know, I can't tell you again, I liken this, the way the system works with 50 days of early voting and Democrats using that and Republicans not, it's like running a 100-yard race against somebody and giving them a 50-yard head start. It's impossible for us to give them 50 days to get out their vote and for us to overcome that in just 13 hours on election day. So folks, let's do everything we can to get our ballots requested, filled out, and returned so that we can bank our vote so that as we get closer to election day, we'll know that our vote's going to count, that our voice is going to be heard, and let's help push our candidates to victory.
Can I ask a question, Sam?
Yes, sir.
So if I vote by mail, will my vote count? Will it be counted?
Absolutely.
I get this question a lot. I ask you this because I get this question a lot by callers all the time where, you know, they're like, hey, we're considering voting by mail here, but I'm afraid my vote will, you know, either be thrown in the trash or will be counted. Will the post office, you know, will the postman throw it away?
Yeah, no. Here's what happens. When you sign up or apply for mail-in ballot, and you can do it, you can go to our website. There's a link to what's called skiptheline.pa.vote. That's skip, S-K-I-P, the, T-H-E, line, L-I-N-E, P-A, .vote. But it explains how the mail-in voting process works. There's videos there, and there's a link by which you can online request your ballot. But when you do that, John, you give an email address. So you're notified by email with the county's processing your application, notified when it's approved and when to look out for your ballot, and you're also notified once you've returned it that your ballot has been returned and received. When you get that notification, you know that your vote is going to count. If you don't get the notification, you can call and try to see, and if you're not sure, you have the option to go to the polls on election day. But I'm telling you, I've been voting since 2020, utilizing this system because I wanted to try it so I could explain it, and I can tell you, I get these notifications on a regular basis, so it does work. Now, James.
And for all those people that want paper ballots, these ballots are made out of paper.
How about that, James, right? You know? So, hey, James, we have 60 seconds left. What do you want to tell our listeners, and what would you like to leave our listeners with and how they could help your campaign, or the last message you want to give to them?
Summer Lee does not represent you. I will represent you. I will support the things that matter to you, getting crime under control and keeping our community safe, supporting our energy industry and driving real prosperity here in Western Pennsylvania, keeping the border under control, making sure that people are vetted and the people that we want in the country are here and the people we don't want are not, and supporting our allies, especially Israel, and making sure that we are respected abroad and at home.
James, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Sam.
You got it. Hey, folks, as always, when we get started talking, man, time seems to fly. Until next week, this is Sam DeMarco signing off from the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Enjoy the rest of your Labor Day weekend.
Happy Labor Day, everyone.